Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Ashley and I will bring you those stories along with Anne Ball and Christopher Jones Cruz. And Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, President Donald Trump is defending his executive order that bans people from 7 Muslim-majority countries from entering the United States. The order was signed by Trump on Friday. It puts a 90-day entry ban on people from Iraq, Iran, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, and Yemen. It also prevents refugees from entering the country for 120 days. Trump has repeatedly called for more controls on U.S. immigration to improve national security and prevent terrorists from entering. His administration has said U.S. policies used to investigate people coming into the United States from certain countries will be reviewed while the current ban is in place.
Thousands of people protested the order at U.S. airports and other locations, including the White House. Immigration groups, human rights activists, and some foreign governments and organizations criticized the ban. Both Democratic and Republican lawmakers also spoke out against the order. The order led to confusion at many American airports over the weekend. In some cases, people were detained at airports while holding legal documents allowing them to live and work in the United States. A federal judge in New York took action Saturday to block the travel restrictions. Judge Ann Donnelly issued a temporary ban on deportations of people arriving at U.S. airports if they were carrying approved visas or refugee applications. Judges in several other states also issued rulings challenging Trump's order. The Department of Homeland Security said Sunday it planned to comply with judicial orders. It added that Trump's order would continue to be enforced to make sure those entering do not pose a threat to our country or the American people.
President Trump took to Twitter on Monday to defend the order. The tweet said, "There is nothing nice about searching for terrorists before they can enter the country. This was a big part of my campaign. Study the world." He defended the decision to launch the ban without notice. If the ban were announced with a 1-week notice, the bad would rush into our country during that week, he tweeted. Trump also took aim at Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who has criticized the travel restrictions. The Democratic senator appeared to hold back tears while speaking with reporters about the order. At the White House Monday, Trump spoke about Schumer's reaction. "I noticed Chuck Schumer yesterday with fake tears. I'm going to ask him who was his acting coach because I know him very well. I don't see him as a crier."
Other U.S. lawmakers were critical of the ban, including Republican Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham. The senators wrote in a joint statement, "We are particularly concerned by reports that this order went into effect with little to no consultation with the Departments of State, Defense, Justice, and Homeland Security. Such a hasty process risks harmful results." Trump responded to the statement on Twitter, saying McCain and Graham were both weak on immigration. He added that the two senators should be more focused on illegal immigration, border security, and the Islamic State. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell expressed support for stronger immigration screening, but said he opposes religious tests. McConnell told ABC News, "I also think it's important to remember that some of our best sources in the war against radical Islamic terrorism are Muslims, both in this country and overseas." Several Democrats in Congress said they planned to introduce legislation to stop Trump's travel ban.
Former President Barack Obama also responded to the travel ban and praised protesters for showing their opposition to it. Obama's spokesman, Kevin Lewis, said, "The president fundamentally disagrees with the notion of discriminating against individuals because of their faith or religion." It is the first time Obama has issued a statement about Trump since leaving office on January 20th. Some Trump administration officials have compared Trump's order to a policy carried out under Obama. That policy, put in place in 2011, identified the same seven nations as places of concern for terrorism. But the Obama policy only related to individuals without a U.S. visa and was never considered a travel ban. Obama spokesman Kevin Lewis added, "Citizens exercising their constitutional right to assemble, organize, and have their voices heard by their elected officials is exactly what we expect to see when American values are at stake."
Foreign leaders and organizations around the world were also critical of Trump's order. A spokesperson for the European Commission said the 28-nation group is currently studying the ban. In an interview, Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said choices had to be made about the world we want to live in. He said one choice is for, in his words, isolationism and inequality, while the other is to unite for social equality and strength. International aid group Doctors Without Borders accused Trump of keeping people trapped in war zones, directly endangering their lives. It called on the U.S. government to lift the ban and restart the resettlement of refugees. In Germany, a foreign ministry spokesman said tens of thousands of people are likely to be affected by the travel ban. German Chancellor Angela Merkel expressed regret about the order, but stopped short of condemning it. The world's largest body of Islamic nations, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, condemned the order in a statement. The 57-nation group called the policy selective and discriminatory, saying it will only fuel further extremist violence and terrorism.
Google's chief executive, Sundar Pichai, said Trump's travel ban could be painful for some of the 187 employees reportedly affected. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg added that the door should not be closed to refugees and those who need help. In a statement to employees, Ford Motor Company said it opposed the travel restrictions. "We do not support this policy or any other that goes against our values as a company," it said. Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. Chief Executive Lloyd Blankfein also spoke out against the order. In a message to his employees, he said, "I would note that it has already been challenged in federal court, and some of the order has been enjoined, at least temporarily."
Last Friday, President Donald Trump signed an executive order banning refugees and people from 7 Muslim-majority countries from entering the United States. The countries are Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Protesters across the U.S. immediately objected to the restrictions. Some argue that Trump's order discriminates against Muslims and defies the American tradition of welcoming immigrants. Many of these protesters correctly point out that the U.S. is a country of immigrants. However, history shows that the U.S. is also a country of restrictions on immigrants. Trump's government is not the first administration to restrict immigration, including on the basis of national origin. The U.S. Constitution, which went into effect in 1789, gave Congress absolute authority over immigration law, says Linda Monk. The president executes those laws through regulations. Monk wrote a book about the Constitution called The Words We Live By. She explains that for about the first 100 years of American history, Congress did not place any federal limits on immigration. During those years, Irish and German immigrants came to the U.S. in large numbers. Many Chinese immigrants did too. They hoped to find gold in California. When they did not, they stayed anyway. But some members of the American public disapproved of these groups. They did not like the Catholic religion that many Irish and German immigrants practiced, and they did not like Asian immigrants, whom they viewed as convicts, prostitutes, or competition for jobs. So, in the late 1800s, Congress moved for the first time to limit the number of immigrants. Lawmakers targeted Asians, especially Chinese. The Page Act and the Chinese Exclusion Act banned most Chinese women and workers. By the turn of the 20th century, the U.S. federal government had increased its role in immigration. It established Ellis Island in New York as the entry point for immigrants, and it oversaw a dramatic increase in the number of immigrants, especially from Italy and Eastern Europe. Many of these new arrivals were uneducated and had little money. Once again, some people opposed the number and kind of immigrants entering the country. A group called the Immigration Restriction League was formed. They petitioned Congress to require immigrants to show that they could at least read. Both presidents, Grover Cleveland and Woodrow Wilson, opposed the requirement. But in 1917, Congress approved the measure over Wilson's objections. People who wished to settle in the U.S. now had to pass a literacy test. In the 1920s, restrictions on immigration increased. The Immigration Act of 1924 was the most severe. It limited the overall number of immigrants and established quotas based on nationality. Among other things, the act sharply reduced immigrants from Eastern Europe and Africa, and it completely restricted immigrants from Asia, except for Japan and the Philippines. At the same time, the historian's page at the State Department notes that the act made more visas available to people from Britain and Western Europe. In all of its parts, the most basic purpose of the 1924 Immigration Act was to preserve the ideal of U.S. homogeneity. The State Department history page concludes. During the 1940s and 50s, the U.S. made some policy changes that increased, however slightly, the number and nationalities of immigrants. Then, in 1965, a major change happened. Under pressure in part from the civil rights movement, Congress passed the Immigration and Nationality Act. President Lyndon Johnson signed it. The act eliminated the quota system based on nationality. Instead, it prioritized immigrants who already had family members in the U.S. It also sought to offer protection to refugees from areas with violence and conflict. Even though the act kept some limits in place, the origins of immigrants changed dramatically. Instead of being from Western Europe, most immigrants to the U.S. by the end of the 20th century were originally from Mexico, the Philippines, Korea, the Dominican Republic, India, Cuba, and Vietnam. A professor at the University of Miami School of Law says the 1965 law ended overt discrimination in U.S. immigration policy. Kunal Parker is also the author of a book called Making Foreigners, Immigration and Citizenship Law in America. Parker says that people who are protesting Trump's executive order probably perceive what is happening as contrary to U.S. tradition since 1965. But Parker cautions against seeing Trump's action as illegal. He points out that the Supreme Court has historically permitted the president and Congress a good deal of authority to regulate immigration. And he notes, President Obama also signed an executive order related to immigration. That order aimed to protect the families of undocumented immigrants with U.S.-born children. However, Parker says something that is legal might be very problematic. I'm Ann Ball.
People blink their eyes tens of thousands of times every day. Scientists have long believed blinking was an involuntary movement and served mainly to keep the eyeballs wet. But a new study suggests it has a more important purpose. An international team of scientists studied the blinking of human eyelids. The team reported to researchers from the University of California at Berkeley. The journal Current Biology published their findings. The team said it found that blinking repositions our eyeballs so we can stay focused on what we are seeing. It said that when we blink our eyelids, the eyes roll back into their sockets, the bony area that surrounds and protects the eyes. However, the researchers found the eyes don't always return to the same position. They say this causes the brain to tell the eye muscles to realign our eyesight. Garrett Mouse was the lead writer of the report. He serves as an assistant professor of psychology at Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. Mouse says our eye muscles are quite sluggish and imprecise, so the brain needs to constantly adapt its motor signals to make sure our eyes are pointing where they're supposed to. Our findings suggest that the brain gauges the difference in what we see before and after a blink, and commands the eye muscles to make the needed corrections. The researchers say that without such corrections, our surroundings would appear unclear and even jumpy. They say the movement acts like a steadicam of the mind. Researchers say they asked volunteers to sit in a dark room while staring at a small dot on a flat surface. They used special cameras to follow the volunteers' blinks and eye movements. After each blink, the dot was moved 1 centimeter to the right. The volunteers did not notice this, but the brain did. It followed the movement and directed the eye muscles to refocus on the dot. After the dot was moved in this way 30 times, the volunteers' eyes changed their focus to the place where they predicted it would be. Professor Mouse says even though participants did not consciously register that the dot had moved, their brains did and adjusted with the corrective eye movement. These findings add to our understanding of how the brain constantly adapts to changes, commanding our muscles to correct for errors in our body's own hardware. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Peanuts, are among the most popular snack foods in the United States. Millions of American children are raised on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. PB&Js, as we like to call them, are found in children's lunchboxes across the country. Or at least, they used to be. Now, many school officials ban peanuts, or any products containing peanuts, from school property. About 2% of U.S. school children will have an allergic reaction to peanuts. And that number is growing. People allergic to peanuts can develop skin conditions or watery eyes. Children with a peanut allergy can develop a skin condition called eczema. Some reactions are so severe they can result in death. So far, doctors have advised parents against serving peanut-containing foods to children under the age of 3. But a 2015 British study found that waiting too long most likely is partly to blame for the peanut allergy problem. Anthony Fauci is head of America's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Dr. Fauci spoke to VOA on Skype. He notes that in Israel, people have a tradition of feeding peanuts to babies. He says the percentage of Israeli children with a peanut allergy is much lower than the rate among Jewish children living in England.
It was observed that in Israel, where they have a custom of feeding peanut-based food to babies, infants, within the first few months of life, that when you in fact compare the incidence of peanut allergy among the Israeli children compared to comparable Jewish children living in England, the incidence of peanut allergy was more than 80% decreased among the Israeli kids as opposed to the kids who were living in England.
Dr. Fauci says this finding is very important. It means that babies have a natural mechanism that can be trained not to react negatively to peanuts. That mechanism may turn off as the baby reaches the age of 1. He says a team of experts have agreed on a new guidance for U.S. pediatricians who specialize in children's allergies. Fauci calls giving children peanuts a way of challenging their bodies. He thinks it could be done safely with some boys and girls, but not with others.
If the child has a history of severe eczema or egg allergy, that in the first 4 to 6 months of life, that you should bring the child to an allergist specialist who can do a skin test or a blood test to determine if the child does have an underlying allergy to peanuts, because if they do, you're going to want to refrain from challenging that child. Whereas if they don't, then it would be safe to challenge the child and feed them peanuts at 4 to 6 months.
If the child has moderate eczema and has a mild reaction to eggs, the doctor is likely to suggest that that child be fed peanut-containing foods at the age of 6 months. That child may need no allergy tests either. Children who have no allergies or family history of allergies can be given peanuts at any age. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.